Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames. Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Good morning, I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for keeping us company. This is All Sides Weekend. This is the Arts and Culture segment, where we talk about what's going on stages, in galleries, in film theaters, in concert halls throughout Columbus. And I am delighted to welcome three people who make a lot of things happen here, beginning with Kelsey Moore, who is, we're going to call you the director of marketing, okay, for Opera Columbus. She's here to talk about The Anonymous Lover. That'll tempt you. That'll keep people tuned in. Dave Phillippe is here. He is the film curator for the Wexner Center for the Arts. And Brayton Ballenbacher is the managing artistic director. I wrote that down for the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. All of you have a lot going on, and I want to begin with Dave Phillippe because it's going to be very, very cold. It's going to be snowy, but when the snow's gone, people won't want someplace to go, so let's go see a film.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. We have a lot of great things coming up. This is a little bit in the future, but I think I would lead with at the end of February, we have our 13th annual Cinema Revival. It's a festival of film restoration, newly restored films that runs February 26th through March 2nd. And it's a weekend where people can come and see films from across eras, from across disciplines. And what really, I think, sets it apart is we bring in a lot of the people that do the work on the films to explain what goes into restoring a film. Just to call out three highlights, the very first program on Thursday afternoon, this is the second time we've worked with OSU Libraries to present something called Film Treasures from OSU Libraries and the OSU Archives, and it was very popular last year, and I think people don't realize how many different special collections are around the university and how many little pockets of film are around the university, and they put together a really interesting program last year. Think about like home movies from the Bird Polar Research Center, you know, things like that. So that's the first program on Thursday, February 26th. The next day, on Friday, February 27th, we are doing the world premiere of a film called Money from Home. It was a Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis film. But what's significant about it was a Technicolor film and it was a 3D film. So if you know
Dean Martin in 3D, wow.
Exactly. So with 3D, that's two cameras, and with Technicolor, there are three color separations per camera. So it took them forever to restore all of those different elements. And we've worked with the 3D Film Archive quite a few times in the past, and they're going to be here. We're very lucky to be doing the world premiere.
Question, that would have been a mainstream film 70 or so years ago when it first came out. So why would a film like that need to be restored?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, number one, I think the main thing is it's 3D. And so, you know, the 3D craze, if you will, lasted only for a few years in Hollywood in the early 1950s. And it just the work that would go, there's kind of, in a commercial sense, there's no reason to do it. You know, you're not going to be able to stream it on Netflix or whatever in 3D, you know, for most people. And so I think that was a big hurdle, is getting the studio on board, getting the funding, you know, to ultimately do something that's probably not going to, again, in commercial terms, pay back all of the work and time that went into it.
So is a film like that the one that you'd wear the glasses?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Yep. And they showed the head of the 3D Film Archive, Bob Firmanek, was here in May, and they showed a little teaser of it, and it looks spectacular. And, you know, it's Martin and Lewis at the height of their fame, and it's really fun. And if I could just slip one more kind of highlight from the weekend in, the next night, on February 28th, we're going to be doing a new restoration of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And of course, most people, you know, have seen that film. It's a great classic, obviously, but they restored it in 70 millimeter. And so we're going to be showing it on a, you know, actual 70 millimeter print. And I saw a little snippet at a festival last summer. And again, it just, these restorations these days just look amazing. And the person introducing that is a person named Grover Crisp from Sony Pictures, who I'd say it's safe to say is kind of the dean of film restoration among all of the different Hollywood studios. He's kind of like the leading figure, and he's been to the festival a number of times in the past, and he always does such a great job of explaining the work, explaining what goes into it, showing, you know, kind of before and afters with the restoration process. So but that's just three of the events. People can visit wexarts.org to get the whole schedule.
I have. There is a film restoration that's been in the news lately, and I'm going to ask you about it in our next segment.
Okay.
Okay. I want to welcome Kelsey Moore. I think this is your debut with us at All Sides Weekend on WOSU, and I thank you for joining us today. You are the director of marketing for Opera Columbus, and when you're the director of marketing for a performing arts organization, your job is butts in seats. Let's get crude, but let's tell the truth. Your job is to fill those seats and those theaters and have a big, enthusiastic crowd for your presentations. And something coming up is called The Anonymous Lover, which is pretty much just in time for Valentine's Day. You will be at the Palace Theater. Okay, let's put butts in seats. Discuss The Anonymous Lover.
Yeah, so The Anonymous Lover, it's 90 minutes in French and English with English captions. It's very much like a romantic comedy vibe. It's about this guy who likes this girl, so he sends her letters, signing it The Anonymous Lover, and the audience finds out very quickly that this guy is actually her best friend. And it kind of goes through all of the chaos and hilarity of that, and then it ends with a happy ending, which is not very common in opera. But, yeah.
Well, you could rewrite it and they could poison each other and something and then sing a big aria before they all die. That would be fun too, but that's not what the composer did. The composer's very interesting. Talk about the composer, if you will.
Yeah, the composer is Joseph Bologne. He is one of the first known Black composers in opera. He sounds very similar to Mozart, and Mozart was actually inspired by a lot of his music, so he took a lot of ideas from things that Joseph composed. And he was around the same time as Mozart, too. So this work is actually rediscovered after about 200 years being lost.
The Chevalier de Saint-Georges was his official name. He was ennobled in France. Mm-hmm. He was also a fencing champion and a soldier. This guy was a polymath. He did everything. And I guess in his spare time wrote charming operas that we're going to hear. What are the dates?
February 13th and 15th.
At the Palace Theater in downtown Columbus. That's The Anonymous Lover. We're going to come back more to you and sell some more tickets. And I want to welcome Brayton Ballenbacher to the program, the managing artistic director
I'm not the opera.
Maybe your next job. But right now.
Nope, that's not going to be
the
my
Columbus
next job.
Gay Men's Chorus. So tell me what the managing artistic director does for the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus.
Yeah, so I mean, I do a lot of the programmatic stuff, but then also help out with the marketing, kind of the admin stuff. But yeah, it's kind of a hodgepodge job.
How many voices right now in the chorus?
I have 162 on the roster this current cycle.
Is it an audition chorus?
It's a voiced chorus. So, you know, one of the things is that we have started as a gay men's chorus back in the 90s, which was gay men. But as we have realized that we need to be obviously just as inclusive as we want everybody else in the world to be, we have a lot of cis females that are in the group or trans or non-binary people. And so I put their voices where they fit. But sometimes I don't have space for everybody on stage, as you can imagine, with that many people. So sometimes people, unfortunately, can't make it during that cycle.
You also have a couple of smaller choruses within the group.
Yeah, we have a small audition group called Vox. We have a group called Illuminati, which is a sacred ensemble. And we just started our Queer Shindos, our youth chorus, last year.
Now, the last time you were here, you were thinking about doing that. Mm-hmm. Now it's happened. Discuss
it's happened.
That.
Yeah.
Let's get some details about that.
Yeah, so it's ages 13 to 17, but you can be 18 if you're in high school during that time. And they rehearse on Sunday afternoons. And we do two different cycles with them. One is January through April. And then the other one is a summer cycle with them.
Is there an overlap, or do you have two different groups doing that in those two segments?
It could be an overlap. It's the same thing like the large chorus. People come and they will be there for, you know, whenever it works in their schedule, and then maybe they'll come back for the next cycle. Maybe other people will. So,
now, when you're talking about gay youth being in this choir, did you get any blowback from the community as you were planning it?
No. You know, I think that we're very fortunate here in Columbus that we have a very progressive, very queer-friendly community. I think that obviously if we were trying to do this in a smaller place that was maybe more conservative, we would have blowback. But, you know, the way that the world is going right now, the queer community is desperately in need for more outlets and opportunities for especially our youth to be able to be themselves, because God knows our politicians don't care about our queer youth the way that our community does. So we are trying to find more spaces for them to be safe and who they are.
The gay men's chorus movement, as I recall, began, I think, in the 1980s. I think the New York City gay men's chorus was the first. It may not have
no.
been. Okay, you're shaking your
yeah.
head.
Yeah, so ahead. Actually, we technically believe that. The way that we think about it is that the Anacrusis group in Philadelphia was the first of our organization. And
About when?
It was in the 70s. Because San Francisco started... And then they were only a couple of months in, and Harvey Milk was assassinated. And then they sang on the steps of the courthouse or whatever. So San Francisco was after, but Anacrusis is technically the first one in the Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses movement in the U.S.
Okay, I was around then. You were not. So I'm going to tell you that as in those early days, it got sometimes unclear of what was political and what was musical. Mm-hmm. Where are we now with that?
I mean,
all these years later.
I mean, I think so. I'm also a social worker. That's my background training, right? So, I believe that everything that we do is political, and I think that right now it's and you know I know that probably Wexner and Opera Columbus have this as well, but we're worried about what's going to happen with our grants, and then what happens in the economy so that people can buy tickets. So everything we do right now is political, and I think that even us having a moment, you know, we have two concerts coming up that are both collaboration concerts in February and March with both local choruses and then some choruses from across the Midwest. And just by having a space where we are openly queer with both straight allied choruses or maybe straight people who aren't super progressive, and then also organizing queer people together, it's a political movement because people are coming after our organizations. Lawmakers are trying to get rid of funding for the arts. And everything that we do right now is saying who we are as an organization. And it's exhausting, Chris, because you have to walk this fine line because we're not allowed, you know, we are apolitical in the sense of like what we do, but we're allowed to talk about bills as 501c3s that we support and we don't. And so anytime there's a budget bill that wants to cut the arts or there's a bill that is trying to harm LGBTQ people, we're allowed to come out and say that that is not what we support.
And I know now it's no longer fashionable to say DEI. I say it anyway because I don't care. Opera Columbus under Julia and your stewardship has been very, very at the forefront of that. Am I not correct?
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of casting, in terms of programming?
Oh, yes, yes. So we have a Crane Directing Fellowship, which uplifts BIPOC stage directors who are early in their career. And that has been an award-winning program, which has been really cool. We cast diversely and stuff like that as well.
Yes, you have. There's this racially blind casting. If the voice is wonderful, that voice gets cast.
Right. Yeah.
And nobody cares what the package is in. And that's opera. That's as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. We are talking arts and culture with Brayton Bollenbacher from the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, with Dave Philippi, the film curator from the Wexner Center for the Arts, and Kelsey Moore, the director of marketing of Opera Columbus. And we will be right back.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back. This is All Sides Weekend Arts and Culture. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you for your company. I am here with Kelsey Moore from Opera Columbus, with Brayton Bollenbacher from the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, and Dave Phillippe from the Wexner Center for the Arts. I want to turn to Kelsey a little bit more to talk about The Anonymous Lover. But first of all, how do you get to be a marketing director for an opera company, and what's your job? I said butts and seats, but okay, you can be a little more flowery.
Right. So I've always been interested in the performing arts, and then I just like marketing because I think it's really fun. Before working at Opera Columbus, I had never seen an opera before, so I actually learn about the operas as we're doing them, which is kind of fun because it gives me a different perspective on how to sell it and how to market it. But yeah, I love my job. I've been here for about 4 years, and it's very fun to create really cool, different operas and shows, but also have a meaningful impact on the community.
Now, you and I both know that opera is a bunch of fat people standing there screaming at each other and in a foreign language, and they don't move. Disgust. Debunk that.
That is just not true. All of our productions are fully staged, which means that they are moving around. They have specific places that they're supposed to stand to sing their arias and stuff like that. We actually, a couple seasons ago, did an immersive opera where it like happens all around you. So they're moving within the crowd and stuff like that, which is very cool. So yeah, it's not just fat people singing on a stage.
The last production you did was a collaboration with the Wexner Center and Michonne Auditorium,
yes.
Which was one of the most compelling things I had seen. I knew the book quite well, and people knew the Spencer Tracy movie. It was The Old Man and the Sea, Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea, that was set to music by Paola Prestini, who I told that should rewrite the St. Matthew Passion, but that's another story. Conversation, produced by a really exciting woman called Beth Morrison. I don't know if that was atypical for an opera company or more typical now as repertoire changes and gets more cutting edge and more modern, but it certainly worked. And there was what I called the Wexner Center audience came to it that might not go to La Boheme, okay? It was a new audience. They were very, very engaged, and it was a very compelling production. Were there challenges in selling that? Because people might know the novel, but that's all they'd know.
Yeah, I think that was the main thing, was people were expecting like, oh, it's going to be a stage version of the novel, which it wasn't. It was loosely based on the novel, but mostly followed the life of Ernest Hemingway. But since Beth Morrison Project had done it before, we did have a lot of assets of what it would look like. And all of the cast was the same as her original production of it, which was cool, except for, of course, OSU's student chorus that we had. It was easier because normally we don't have any photos until we're putting it up on the stage, and we only do it for one weekend. So it was easy in that we knew what it looked like and we could show everyone what it looked and sounded like. But
yeah, there were actually YouTube clips of the production that you did that I certainly used when I was preparing online material for it as well. Talk about, because that's something that's written by people who are still young. Well, they're younger than me, which is kind of a low bar. But they're people who are still young and still sort of really working all the time rather than dead white guys. Beethoven's a dead white guy. I mean, that's also a very high bar. But is it more interesting? What's it like working with the creators who are in the room with you?
Yeah, it was very cool because Paola was actually there for pretty much the entire run. So we got to see her interacting with the singers
the
and
composer,
kind of giving them like her notes on how like she envisioned it. And yeah, it was really cool to work with them.
Now, The Anonymous Lover, which is your next production, which sort of goes on either side of Valentine's Day, February 13th and 15th, but we'll call it Valentine's Weekend, is an opera from the 18th century. that I think was lost for about 100 years or so and was rediscovered because I know it was done in Philadelphia about 10 years ago and a recording was made. But Joseph Bouillon, the Chevalier de Saint-Georges, who was born, I think, in Martinique in the 1760s, a movie was made about him last year that didn't play much. It needs to come back. He was a very, very compelling, interesting. He's made for the movies, this guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he, as I say, he was a soldier and a fencing master and a composer. And, you know, if he didn't like The Soprano, he'd probably take a foil and cut her wig off or whatever. But what are you doing? What are you thinking about him and his life as you prepare to sell the show?
Yeah, so Opera Columbus has a little subgroup called the Friends of Opera Columbus, and they're actually doing a showing of Chevalier, which is the movie about his life.
When is that? Let's talk.
I do not know the date yet, but it's on Disney Plus and Hulu if you're interested in just watching it on your own. So February is Black History Month, so we also are thinking about that as we're doing this, since he was the first Black opera composer.
Okay, terrific. Kelsey Moore is the director of marketing for Opera Columbus. If you want to see a delightful comedy that's very well constructed, where everybody's in love with the wrong person, but they figure it out while singing at the end of the show, then you want to see The Anonymous Lover from Opera Columbus at the Palace Theater, which is February 13th and 15th. 15th is probably a matinee, I would think. That's Friday and Sunday.
Yes.
And then you can go out with your honey on the 14th or just sleep all day. That's probably what I'm going to do. Brayton Bollenbacher, now you we're talking about collaborations with the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus and a couple of other local choruses. Talk about that.
Yeah, so we have two events coming up. So actually, if you are going to go to the opera on the 13th or the 15th, but you need something to do on the 14th, we have, so the Gala, which is the Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses in the United States, which there's 178-ish choruses in the U.S., is going to have their annual workshop here in Columbus, Ohio, which
really
is super exciting. And part of that is that we're having a joint concert with the Indianapolis Women's Chorus, Muse, which is the Feminist Chorus of Cincinnati, Cincinnati Men's Chorus, Windsong, which is the Cleveland Feminist Chorus, Prism, which is Detroit Gay Men's Chorus, and then your very own wonderful, amazing Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. And that's on the February 14th.
All of these groups in town on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
What theater?
It's at the Davidson, so that's very exciting. And then a month later, which is just as exciting, maybe even more so for me, is that we are doing a collaborative concert with the Gahanna Community Chorus, with Columbus Capriccio, and then
Larry
with,
Griffith, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the Columbus Women's Chorus on March 14th, again at the Davidson. The two performances, though, are both collaborative concerts. They'll be very different. The February 14th is very much like a 10-minute spot from each group.
Really? Okay.
And then on the 14th of March, it's going to be every group's going to have their own set, and then we do a couple collaborative pieces together, which will probably be like 300-350 singers in that space. And so we're really excited for both of these collaborations.
Has the Gay Men's Chorus before collaborated with local organizations?
We have been, but not as the way that we are now. You know, I think that we, along with all these other arts organizations, very much understood from GCAC that, hey, we have a lot more people that are coming to do arts, a lot more arts organizations, and the economy is not great right now. So how are we going to make things work for all of the arts programs? And so being able to do collaborations, I think, is a really great way to do it, to expand that, also get some ticket sales so that we get put more money back into GCAC grant funding and the arts in general. And the Davidson and Kappa have been remarkable in promoting and really jumping in with us on these collaboration performances and workshops that we're putting together.
You know, there's no such thing as less is more. More is more and more is better, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I think everybody right now is looking for community, right?
Exactly.
Ultimately, we all are, and why would we try to limit that? We should expand that. Bring as many people in. We want everybody should feel love and acceptance and community and feel like you have people to go to.
And music is a great, and singing is a great way to do that. Music is a great, or sitting there and enjoying it. The Davidson, by the way, said the Rife Center, just so people understand.
Mm-hmm,
okay, this
mm-hmm.
is downtown theater. Dave Filippi is here from the Wexner Center, the film curator, and we were talking about something off mic that really caught my eye. There's a movie with Gloria Swanson made 100 years ago, literally, mm-hmm. called Queen Kelly, which was her one collaboration with her then-boyfriend, Joseph P. Kennedy, the father of our president. And whenever she would be on TV, I'm really old, so I remember when she was on. I remember Merv Griffin.
Me too.
Don't, and Mike Douglas. She would be asked about three things: Sunset Boulevard, Joseph Kennedy, and Queen Kelly. And Queen Kelly was thought to be completely lost or just not viewable because it wasn't finished. What happened with Queen Kelly, and what is Queen Kelly?
So, Queen Kelly is part of the same festival I was mentioning earlier. We're showing it Saturday, February 28th, 1 o'clock. I'll try to be succinct, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
It was a film that was financed by Gloria Swanson's lover, as you mentioned, Joseph Kennedy, and the father of the future president. And they enlisted the director Eric von Stroheim to direct the picture. And von Stroheim was known for going way over budget, for including scandalous material and really pushing the envelope in that regard.
And this was not Mary Pickford.
No.
No.
And so they start, and Gloria Swanson plays a girl who falls in love with a prince, and the prince's, the queen he's supposed to marry finds out about it and banishes Gloria Swanson to basically a brothel in another country. And so already you're pushing the envelope. And at a certain point, I was getting so over budget and they were getting so concerned about seeing the content in the film that they just basically kind of pulled the plug on it and got rid of Eric von Stroheim. So they had this much of the film made. And they tried to do what they could to salvage it and to get it out and to show it in this kind of shortened, truncated version. And over the years, they tinkered with, Gloria Swanson tinkered with it a little bit to, you know, change this, change that, played around. In the 1980s, a person named Dennis Doros, who founded Milestone Films along with his wife and business partner, Amy Heller. And Dennis basically made it the rest of his life's work to restore this film as much as was humanly possible. And when digital technology came along, it became easier to restore different film elements. They started using like outtakes and photos from the set and things like that to try to fill it out more to match what was von Stroheim's stated, you know, kind of vision for the film. So it's not fully restored in the traditional sense, but it's as close as you can possibly get to what von Stroheim had in mind for the film. And the reason it's back in the news now, it had its world premiere at the Venice Film Festival last summer, and just this past weekend the restoration opened in New York City, so there's a really great article in the New York Times. There's a really great article in the New Yorker, and yeah, we'll be hosting the, I guess, regional premiere in February.
That's part of your film. This, of course, is a silent part film. Did you do a lot with silent films?
Oh yeah, on a fairly regular basis. Now I won't have a good answer to that, but I think most years we include silent films in our restoration festival, and if something comes out that's kind of new and noteworthy in terms of a restoration or whatever, we often show silent films, yeah, and often with live music. And
do you have a programming philosophy with film because you have such a wide pool? I mean, you just sit here with your head in your hands and go, okay, pick five or six that we get that might be interesting.
It's really, I get asked that all the time, and there's not a good answer for it. We really try to show things that have some level of urgency to them, whether it's a new film about a certain topic, whether it's a highly, acclaimed film from another country or that's winning awards at international film festivals, but also new restorations. We show local work on a pretty regular basis. So it's really, I guess, kind of the Cinematheque model where you treat all films somewhat equally, whether it's, again, a short experimental film, a classic from the 1940s, a new film from India. We really try to, it's a team of us. It's my colleagues, Chris Stoltz and Leila Benali, and it reflects what the community is telling us that they're interested in. It reflects our own tastes. It's there's not a formula to it.
film is one of the things that the Wexner Center is most known for, but let's make the point that there's a great deal with the visual arts, there's a great deal with the performing arts. Is there a performing arts curator now?
Yeah, Natalie Bonjour. She's been on the job for, I won't remember exactly how long, but quite a while. And
I thought it was Chuck's. I've been around for a long time.
Natalie has been here for a little while now, and it's really exciting. They have a great team in performing arts. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is one thing that, people can find everything under one roof at the Wexner Center.
Exactly,
so
right.
We do have this great performing arts program. Everyone's talking about that weekend of February 13 and 14, but our next gallery opening is Friday, February 13th, where our new shows will be opening.
Well, the opera's at night, so you can come during the day.
Yeah. And actually, tonight we have, fortunately, I think they're both sold out, but we have a great jazz show with the saxophonist Emmanuel Wilkins. There might be some tickets for the 9 o'clock show, but I know the 7 is sold out. But yeah, I mean, that's what we try to do in Columbus is, you can find it all at the Wex.
Find it all at the Wex. Dave Philippi is the film curator for the Wexner Center for the Arts. Kelsey Moore is the director of marketing for Opera Columbus. Brayton Ballenbacher is the managing artistic director of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. When did the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus begin?
1991.
You weren't here then. Were you born?
I was born. I was not here. You know, we had five founders, and you know, this is the time when pride marches in Columbus were still, people were wearing bags over their
heads, right,
because they thought they were going to get fired or attacked.
Yep. When you program, what do you have a programming formula, philosophy, or how do you work that?
Yeah, so I like to do themes, whatever the theme is. So, example, my June concert is called Ancient Gods, and so it's very much like we could do classical, pop, country, anything that fits into the theme. So I could have a country song about a god somewhere. We're not talking about like our current religions, right? We're talking about like Greek, Roman, maybe some Nordic, maybe some past Asian and African god stories, stuff like that. And so I just kind of work with music like that. I think it's very important, and I think that we all believe this, that finding diversity in our music is super important, but also finding those artists that maybe have not been in the kind of the normal pattern for programming.
And they need to be heard.
They do. There's so much great stuff out there. And we also, one of the things that we do in the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus is we try to bring in as much diversity in our staffing. And we have an intern program, and so we have a lot of diversity there. And they're always giving me insight into new music that I haven't heard or listened to. And mm-hmm. I think that that's really beneficial to the organization.
We will be back in just a moment with more of All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. Don't go away.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back, All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy, here with Brayton Ballenbacher from the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, Dave Philippi, the film curator of the Wexner Center, and Kelsey Moore, director of marketing for Opera Columbus. So, dovetailing Valentine's Weekend, the 13th and 15th of February in the Palace Theater, we have The Anonymous Lover by Joseph Boulogne, the Chevalier de Saint-Georges, a very dashing figure himself. Nobody dies in this opera. There's a lot of naughty stuff on stage, which is always fun for Valentine's Day weekend. And then what happens?
So
after that,
we are closing out our season with La Traviata, which will be a co-production with Kappa and the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, which we're very excited about. It'll be at the Ohio Theater, April 25th and 26th. And that is another love story that starts with a big party but has a more tragic ending.
Yeah, at least she dies this time, for God's sake.
Right.
Yes. All right. La Traviata, which loosely translated as The Fallen Woman, it's by Verdi. It used to be done as a play called Camille, and she would cough for five acts and then expire. Now she sings beautifully. It's a beautiful, it's one of the most popular operas
of all. I believe it's in the top five.
And there are all kinds of tunes that you won't know that's from an opera, and you'll sit there and go, oh, I know that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of familiarity with there. This is not the first collaboration that you've had with the Columbus Symphony and Kappa. What does that entail, that collaboration?
So when we collaborate with them, it's bigger, grander than anything we do normally. So it'll be at the Ohio Theater. In the past, we've done Rigoletto with them. We've done Eugene Onegin. And then last season, we also teamed up with the ballet with Kappa in the Symphony to do West Side Story, which was a big hit.
That was a big hit. You could have sold three or four more performances of that.
Mm-hmm.
Traviata is a much-loved opera. I know that Russell Milanov is conducting that. Am I not correct?
Yeah.
He is. Okay. And I think he is bringing a soprano that is a favorite of his called Aubrey Ballareau be Violetta or Camille. I don't know who else is in it, but it is it's a winner, it's a hit, and you will be singing along. So what do you do if you're a young opera singer and you want to get a job or you want to get known? You go into a competition. Discuss. Opera Columbus has a competition.
So then after that, in May, we have our Cooper Bang vocal competition, which young artists can submit for, and there's a $10,000 prize. We get applications from throughout the United States, but also internationally, and five finalists come to compete in Columbus for the grand prize.
There used to be a rule, I don't know if there still is, that you had to at least have been in Ohio for a few months at some point in your life. I don't know if that's still true or not. That competition was begun many years ago by a very interesting old lady called Irma Cooper, God lover, who was a real character. And it used to be called the Irma Cooper competition. And now Dr. Arthur Bing and his wife have funding it. So it's the Cooper Bing competition.
Yeah.
And they don't care where you live as long as you sing well and you want to come and compete in the competition. That is what date?
It's May 17th.
And that's in the Southern Theater.
Yes.
And they have cookies, I happen to know. They have very good cookies
for
everybody.
Yes, we do a champagne toast.
Yes, never mind the champagne. They have excellent cookies there as well. So, do you have cookies, Brayton Bollenbacher, for your concerts now that you're off your phone?
Well, I was checking on dates. So we do not have cookies, but Kappa usually has the bar open. So you can always grab a drink and drink with the gays.
You are, are you sort of headquartered in the Rife Center? Is that
we have a great partnership with Kappa and the Rife, especially the Davidson. We just bought risers last year with a great capital grant from GCAC, and they have agreed to store them, and we have a great deal with them. And having risers for 160 singers is a lot. So, you know, it's been great to have it there. So our large chorus always has concerts there. So on February 14th, we have the gala concert. On March 14th, we have the collaborative Sounds of Our City with the local choruses, Gahanna, Capriccio, and Columbus Women's Chorus. And then we're back there on June 13th and 14th for our Ancient Gods concert with the large chorus. And then in May, our sacred ensemble Illuminati has their concert on May 3rd. And it's, you know, it's a beautiful Sunday afternoon with us singing sacred music.
The Illuminati, do they sometimes go out and sing in churches on a Sunday? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so once a month, Illuminati goes to a different congregation. It could be Jewish, it could be, you know, Muslim, it could be Christian, whichever congregation reaches out to us. And they perform music that is sacred in nature. And it's great. It's a great outreach opportunity. We're able to get into congregations that maybe queer people have not felt as welcome for, but then also introduce congregations to what it's like to have queer people in your sanctuary.
Well, that can only work to everybody's advantage, because then sometimes you fear what you don't know, and to just solve that little problem with some stunning music.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And what was the other choir? There was Illuminati.
Vox.
What's that?
Vox is our auditioned group, and they do a lot of gigs throughout the year, but then they have a concert in the fall, and their concert this year is going to be a murder mystery themed concert, which is fun. Last year they did a show about space, and we were at CoSci's Planetarium for a concert. So we get to do a little bit more of these kind of niche little performance spaces that, you know, I don't have to have 700 people, seats for 700 people. You know, our small ensemble sells about 200 to 300 seats per concert. So it's a little bit easier to find smaller locations.
You were probably 18 when I first met you, and here you are running a huge chorus and with a social work degree. Are you in private practice, or are you affiliated with a...
So I have a master's in both conducting and social work, and so I actually teach at The Ohio State University a couple of social work classes each semester, which I'm thankful for. I work as full-time as managing artistic director of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, and I also work for the Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses right now. I just like to do...
That's a national organization.
That's a national organization. So I just kind of like to work. You know, when we met 20 years ago, I was a mess, and it's really nice to continue to see you. You look
young.
The same, which is really upsetting to me because I have gauged a lot, but you haven't.
Well, you don't have your lenses in, but that's very, very kind,
I need the bifocals.
Kind of you to say that. No, indeed. We're all gray or whiter and bearded and thicker, but that's fine. We're still, some of us are still here, you know, and just like cockroaches, we're the last ones to go. We'll leave that alone and come back and talk, not speaking of cockroaches, but speaking of film and the arts today, Philippi, and the great people at the Wexner Center. I alluded earlier in the conversation when I was talking about The Old Man of the Sea at the Opera to a Wexner audience. Am I talking out of my hat, or is there such a thing? That's different than a Ohio theater audience or a...
I think that's a good question. I don't... Kelsey could address this much better than I could, but... I do know that there was some interest around, you know, thoughts of like what's a traditional opera audience and what's the Wexner Center audience for that particular event.
Well, Kelsey's audience did come to see The Old Man of the Sea, but I saw a lot of faces I didn't know, which I thought was thrilling. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, and, you know, we do so many events and so many different kinds of events. We joke all the time, like in the court, just in our department, the film department, we could have four different audiences in 1 week. And it's really exciting to that, you know, and just kind of to segue in a series that's going on right now and that'll end next Thursday. Right now we're partnering with Scott Woods of the Streetlight Guild, great writer, poet, and the head of the Streetlight Guild, and we've been doing a series for 3 years now called Sonnets in Cinema, where Scott picks the films and we commission three Columbus poets to write poems in response to the films. And we just had an event last night, and it's, you know, it's kind of a completely different mix of people, you know, people that are part of the poetry community, people that follow Scott's work at the Streetlight Guild, our film audience, kind of all coming together. And the last one of the series will be next Thursday. We're showing Terry Gilliam's Brazil and Ed Plunkett, who's a Columbus poet, and Scott. They'll do poems. And then Scott always says, I always joke, I wish he could introduce all of our films, but he does these really thoughtful and researched introductions to the films that are almost as good as the films themselves. And so that, again, that's just an example of all these different people coming together for depending on the event.
It's great when that happens. It's just more, as I say, more is better.
Yeah.
One of the most fun things that the Wexner Center does, I don't know if you still do it, but in the summer you show movies outdoors.
It's been a while since we've done that.
Yeah. The pandemic kind of killed that momentum for so many things, but
And there's some technical things. Right. If we're going to resume that, we might need to work out. But you're right, it was incredibly popular.
It was fun. It was just, you know, people, you know, I saw my neighbors, and I don't see them in the neighborhood, but I saw them at the movies, and, people bring picnics. It's a lot of fun.
We would love to bring that back. Some wrinkles we have to work
out. Always something going on at the Wexner Center.
That's true.
I don't think the lights go off very often.
Not very often,
complex. How many curators do you have? Well, I don't know if you call them curators. But
it depends on how you define it, but we have two full-time visual arts curators, Rebecca Lowry and Julieta Gonzalez, and they're both relatively new. Kathleen Felder and Aleda Perantoni and Natalie Bonjour in performing arts. Me, Jennifer Lang, who runs our residency studio, supporting filmmakers, Chris Stoltz and Layla, who I mentioned, and then a team of people in education. Again, depending on how you define their roles, but you know, it's a good size.
It's always been
department.
A very important educational component.
Yes, very much.
In fact, it was very, very well known already before. I've been here 35 years, and it was really very strong 35 years ago, and has only gotten stronger over the years.
They do so much. I mean, they do work around the other programs that are happening. They do a lot of work on campus, and then you know, maybe even the most impactful, they go out into the community and do. They bring programs to to schools, to different community centers, and things like that.
You're so kid friendly. There's a lot for kids. It's a lot of stuff.
They do a lot of things for kids. Yeah, and we show films for kids. And, yeah.
Yeah. And Opera Columbus, one of the things that I love is there's always some, you can, at one of the operas, there was a bourbon drinking contest or something like that. Which one was
bar, yeah.
Which one was that?
We have a bourbon bar at all of our Southern Theater shows.
I could sign me up, yeah. but they, you could get dancing lessons. There was face painting. There were all kinds of stuff going on before the curtain. So you sort of could come early and spend an evening and see the show as well, whether or not anybody dies or not, is depending on the night you're there. So The Anonymous Lover, once again, is February 13th and 15th at the Palace Theater. Mm-hmm. Now, the opera always played the Palace Theater. That's where they always played before the Southern was restored.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've been in that building for 20 years, and I don't know why, because it was a stunning old theater that's now been over. They did a huge renovation, Kappa did, about 4 or 5 years ago. How do you find working there?
We have not worked there yet. We'll actually move in. I think it's the 7th of February, but it's our first time since 2005 performing there.
That
explains
their home.
The 20
that,
years.
That was
yeah.
their home, yeah. So that we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah.
And Brayton Bollebecker, now, because you and I have been sort of half-kidding about the fact that we've known each other a long time, talk a little bit about your journey to become the conductor, a choral conductor, and of the Gay Men's Chorus. First of all, I mean, I have a musical background, and I know conducting is a big challenge, and conducting 160 voices at one time is a really big challenge. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so after I finished my undergrad in vocal performance, which we met, I then got a degree in sexualities at Ohio State, and I was like, what am I going to do? I ended up getting a master's at the University of Washington in social work, and I sang with the Seattle Men's Chorus, which is their version of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. Somebody was like, hey, you would be great for working with this queer youth chorus in town, and so I got that, and then I realized I was actually much better as a conductor than I was as a singer. And it's just a passion, and it brings social work and it brings music together. And I'm so fortunate that I get to do that. And so did a couple jobs in Tucson after Seattle. And then I moved back here. And, when we started, it was right before the pandemic. We had 89 on the roster. And now I have anywhere between on stage is usually about 140, but then we get to 170 when we start the rehearsal. So the thing that I always find fascinating is that as conductors go, I am wild compared to others, because other conductors have paid professionals, or they have smaller ensembles and they can be tinier with their gestures. I have so many people on stage, and I am one of these people that is struggling with my eyesight, where it's not as good as it used to be, right? And so
wait.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to get worse, right? I'm sure. And so being able to conduct broadly to 160 people on 6 rows of risers, 25 on each riser, or sometimes I'll have, there have been times where I've had 150 or 200 people just in that I'm conducting. And so you have to be a little bit wilder. And I think that lends itself to, also with the pop music that we do, makes it to be a little bit more dancey than I would say most conductors are.
If someone's listening and they'd like, maybe like to sing with the chorus, what would they do?
Yeah, so they can go to our website at www.cgmc, Columbus State Gay Men's Chorus, and we have signups already for our June concert. The signups will be the last week in March for Ancient Gods, and you come in and you sing a little for me. I listen to your voice, do some scales, make sure you match pitch, and then we'll put you in a section.
And do people stay?
Yeah, actually, we did a study where we went through records, and people traditionally have stayed for 9 concerts, but
really that's several seasons. Yeah,
yeah, but now we're actually at the point where people are staying for 12 onward concerts as an average, so we feel pretty good about that.
Brayton Bollenbacher is the managing artistic director of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. He is also an MSW social worker teaching at The Ohio State University. And what's the national organization you're involved
in? Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses.
And Dave Philippi is the film curator. We'll call you that. You can tell me what exactly your title is at the Wexner Center. We have about 3 minutes left, so everybody gets a minute to sell some tickets as our last sort of thing here, and I'll start with Kelsey and Opera Columbus. Sell some tickets. Go for it.
Yeah, so we'll have The Anonymous Lover at the Palace Theater Valentine's Day weekend. Perfect for Valentine's Day plans or Galentine's Day plans if you want to grab all of your friends. It's a rom-com, happy ending, great vibes.
Rom-com, it's sung in French, I believe, but you have the titles above the stage, so you don't have to know French.
French and English.
And French and English, and I think there's spoken dialogue in that, too. It's like a bit of a play as well. So by the Chevalier de Saint-Georges, Dave Philippi, Queen Kelly, but what else? Coming up real soon.
Across all of our departments, we have so much coming up in the winter and spring.
Go to WexArts.
WexArts.org. Just very quickly, there's an initiative that people will start hearing more about next month, a state initiative called Ohio Goes to the Movies. It's an effort to have a film event in every county in Ohio, in conjunction with the 250th anniversary of, or quincentennial, is that what it's called? But our event is on February 19th. We're partnering with the Thurber House to show two films based on the work of James Thurber, The Male Animal, and then an animated short called Unicorn in the Garden.
Brayton Bollenbacher, real fast, the two concerts coming up.
Yeah, so there's one on February 14th that is with the Gala organization, Indianapolis Women's Chorus, Prism from Detroit, Cincy Men's, Cincy Muse, Cleveland Windsong, which is on February 14th at the Davidson. But the one that I'm really excited about is the March 14th one with the Kahana Community Chorus with Columbus Capriccio's Jubilee Group, and then the Columbus Women's Chorus right at the Davidson again. Tickets are on sale at www.cgmc.com, and we hope to see you there to support local community choruses.
I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend. Thank you, Kelsey. Thank you, Brayton. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Chris Johnson, for making us radio. Thank you, Marcus, our Charleston, our producer, and I'm going home. And thank you all for joining us. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.